Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Welcome back to the show, the DL Link Show on 101.9 High FM. June was all about Cancer Survivors Month, the impact that the treatment can have on the body, this fatigue, neuropathy, hormonal changes, pain, emotional issues, difficulty integrating back into life. And we were looking at that in the first half hour, and we're going to be extending looking at exercising and diet, but quite specifically exercising with Andy Moore, who is a dietitian, and how one gets back on, you know, the gym track, so to speak, when your body has taken such a beating. How does one do it mentally, and how does one do it physically? And also, very interesting, we're going to be unpacking what we thought was good for women may not be, and how different, obviously, men and women are when it comes to going to the gym and what we should be working on. So Andy, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us.
Nikki, thank you so much for having me on the show. So good to be here.
Oh, it's lovely to be on the show, Andy. And, you know, as I said, with it being Cancer Survivors Month, and people, you know, obviously not being able to exercise the way they want to, and now wanting to return. And for people who perhaps just haven't been exercising for a long time, for whatever reason it is, kind of getting back onto the horse can be so difficult mentally and physically. So what do you have to say, Andy, for, you know, there's that resistance, there's the, when you're lying in bed, you've got every positive idea about waking up and going off to gym, and then of course when you wake up, yeah, maybe you don't feel as passionately about it as you did the night before. What do you have to say to that?
Yeah, it can be intimidating to get back into it after a long break, especially after illness, or just not being in the gym. So definitely try and not go all in too quickly. I think that's one thing that helps. If you are going to make it such an intense start to your exercise regime, and it's something that's unsustainable and that you can't make part of your lifestyle, often those types of resolutions tend to fizzle out. So I definitely think trying to make it a daily part of your lifestyle that you enjoy, and something that, yeah, you like to do, does help to make it a bit easier to get back into a fitness regime after taking quite a bit of a long break, and also just easing into it a bit slower than going straight into doing like a marathon. You know, it's you need time to build up to that level.
So often there's that frustration, like, you know where you want to go, you know what you want to be doing, but you've got to climb the mountain, and the frustration is you want to get to the top of the mountain already. So let's return to what you said about you know, don't put it all in there, not all in too quickly, and let's look at how maybe starting smaller is starting smarter in terms of achieving long-term goals.
Definitely. I definitely think a gradual approach to fitness is more sustainable. And as I said, like, getting more a sustainable lifestyle in that you enjoy is more beneficial, and you will see results more effectively than, you know, doing one thing a week and then skipping 2 weeks and then going two things. And, you know, so rather making it something that's smaller and sustainable, because intense sessions and things that are too challenging can make you like dread the next one. So building new habits needs to start small. So habits are formed in about 21 days, they say. So if you can maintain certain lifestyle changes over a period of time, it does become part of your lifestyle. So let's say in week one, you're going to start committing to drinking 2 liters of water a day. In week two, you're going to walk 30 minutes during your lunch break, and then by week three, you know, increase your protein intake and just build and stack those habits, because those small wins can turn into a real change.
So, Andy, I'm going to add to what you've said just because of, interesting literature that I've got my hands on. And the one was a book called Tiny Habits. And the whole idea behind the tiny habit is commit to, and I'd love to hear your point of view, because when I first read this, I thought just like 1 minute, like commit to 1 minute. So imagine, and you talk about habit stacking. So you take something that you already do as a habit. It's already there. It's already ingrained. You don't have to think about it, and stack that, let's say 1 minute of whatever you're going to do onto that. So you know that as soon as you do a certain thing in the day, you know that's when you're going to do the exercise. And so let's say for that minute, you're going to do sit-ups, but you know it's just a minute. And as I said, I'd love your feedback on this. And so what ultimately happens is you can do that. You don't need a lot of motivation to just say, for a minute, I'm going to do some sit-ups. But you do it on day one, and then you do it on day two, and then a week later, you've been doing it for a week. And then at the end of the month, you can turn around and say, I've worked out every day this month. So you're not focusing on it just being the 1 minute. You're focusing on the fact that you have stuck to it, you've returned to it, that it's becoming this habit, and then you start to expand on that. What are your thoughts? Have you had any experience with this?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a nice way to tackle the mountain, as you said earlier, stacking those habits. So we often spend so much time, we don't even realize how much time we waste, in the day, scrolling on our phones, that kind of thing. And if you just think about how much time you've sat there watching TV endlessly and mindlessly, you could try and use that time, even if it's a minute or 2 minutes, just to build in something new into your lifestyle. So like you say, that 1 minute of sit-ups, next week, add to that and stack something else on that, drink more water, those things all add up, definitely. I totally agree with that approach.
Mm. And then, of course, there's kind of like the reframing, the language, like how do you see yourself? What do you tell people about yourself? I hate gym, or I'm not a fit person, or I'm not disciplined. What do you have to say about the kind of language we use to identify ourselves, speak about ourselves, explain to the world who we are?
Yeah, so anyone can be a fit person, and it just takes time and, motivation and persistence to get there. So instead of saying, I want to be fit, I want to exercise, I want to be a fit person, you can start telling yourself, I am someone who trains, I enjoy exercise, this is part of who I am. This starts to rebuild your brain and reframe that mindset that you can do it, and it's really good to have a strong mindset. This, I think that's probably one of the most important parts of seeing changes in your body and your lifestyle is just changing that mind. No one else can make you do it. So, it's so much stronger than who you are. If you identify yourself as someone who loves exercise and this is part of your daily lifestyle, it becomes, that.
Yeah. And such a feeling of achievement when you're able to do it, and then as you say, you build on the habit, you see yourself in a different way. It all just builds and builds and builds. And so I'm wondering for people who have gone through treatment, who have gone through illnesses, and, they're carrying so many other things with them besides, Andy, just, all the psychological and the physical setbacks along the way, quite difficult to kind of get one's mindset. Do you, again, you started off by saying little steps that you build up and you stack the habits. In what you do in interacting with your clients, do you have tips that you share with them to help them with that mindset and build that mindset around being healthier, exercising, diet?
Yeah, so I am a registered dietitian, so that's my background. I'm not really a sports scientist, but with regards to, I am passionate about exercise and gymming. So I think the most important thing is to make it part of your lifestyle, something that's sustainable, because as I said earlier, it's more beneficial to do something that is sustainable in the long term than something that will last a day or 2 days. So try and avoid quick fixes, fad diets, those kind of things. You know, there's a reason why everyone, you know, struggles. A lot of people struggle with weight and their physique and things because it is challenging. It's tricky. Life gets in the way and people don't have much time to designate to that. But I think especially for someone that is trying to get back into exercise, especially someone that's been ill, you need to try and prioritize yourself. Find those pockets of time that you can exercise, whether it's at home or at a gym that's close by. So don't go and sign up for something that's an hour away and it's going to be really difficult to get there. Try and do something that you enjoy, whether it's a workout class or walking with a friend or going for a run, doing the park run. There's so many options. And then just being prepared. So whether it's getting to the gym after work or doing it in the morning, get your stuff ready, get your gym clothes ready and pack them so that it's laid out there and there's no excuses when the time comes. And then just finding that, you know, care for yourself, because it is so important to prioritize yourself, especially after being unwell and going through something like cancer. It's important to prioritize and look back into, you know, who you were before that.
Yeah, so true. Step by step. I was looking at, because I really wanted to address the whole psychological part of returning to gym and what gets in the way. And just looking at this article, and I'm sure you've had a look at the article by Sherry Blackmore, and looking at these very interesting statistics. And very often, of course, you know, foundational research in the past relied predominantly on male subjects. And so very often women were just kind of following what worked for men. But of course, that's all changing. And so that's why there's this huge push for consuming more protein and for working out, doing more strength training or resistance training, perhaps if you know the difference. I'm not sure what the difference is between strength and resistance training. But so interesting that has you know, unfolded over the last probably 5-10 years, Andy. Have you seen a big impact because now women are using research and studies which have been really specifically geared towards women, not men?
Yeah, so as you say, so much of the past research has been done on men and then generalized to women. And you can't ignore the fact that we are physiologically very, very different when it comes to our hormones, life stages, things that we go through, pregnancy, perimenopause, menopause. Women are, they say, we are not simply small men. So there's so many other factors to look at. And that's why women, as a result, we're frequently given the advice that emphasize weight loss, excessive cardio, and avoiding resistance training, because there is a fear of bulking up like men do generally. But you can't really relate women to men in this situation because of our different hormone systems. So men are testosterone dominant, which results in them gaining muscle and retaining it a lot more than we do. So yeah, I think the research has definitely skewed the way that we see exercise and prioritize what type of exercise to do. And then, yeah, when it comes to their strength training versus resistance training, those are the same thing. So it's basically weightlifting, using weights in your exercise, but it can also include using body weight. So things like squats and lunges, that also counts as resistance training. So basically, yeah, it's definitely important for women to now re-look at the benefits of resistance training. We can't just do hours and hours of cardio and expect that that's enough. You know, there's so many benefits to resistance training.
Yeah. And as I said, you know, I mean, it's relatively new, but certainly there is this emphasis now being put on the resistance or the strength training. And as I was saying just before that, then of course, everyone's talking about protein, and then there's creatine, and then there's collagen, and then there's, everyone is talking about different things. Is it important? You're a nutritionist, you would say definitely support your workout with the right kind of food. Do you think food, eating food with you know, well-balanced protein and carbohydrates is sufficient if you're doing strength and resistance training, or are you one of those who say you need to increase your protein intake and perhaps even put in a little bit of creatine?
So there's nothing wrong with fueling your exercise and your, you know, your recovery with your nutrition alone. You can fulfill those needs with your diet, so with food. But a lot of people are battling to meet those needs, you know, with how busy our lifestyles are. Sometimes you miss breakfast. If you're running around, if you're on the road, you know, you can't really find something with enough protein in it. So that's when I do think that supplements can come in handy, whether it's just for an extra bit of protein in a shake or in a bar. And then obviously with creatine, that's something that's become really, really popular because there's so much research around it, even specifically in women, which just shows how good it is with muscle retention, you know, cognitive health and memory. There's so many benefits to that. To creatine. So as I say, you can definitely meet those requirements using your nutrition alone. But if you do want to see, you know, take it up one notch and then see more results, or if you're changing things up and your diet isn't enough, I definitely do see a place for supplementation. And and it's maybe it's something to try if someone isn't seeing the results that they want to see and isn't meeting their needs just through your nutrition alone.
Really interesting. We're just so aware of so many more people. Maybe it's just where I am. So many people with these, you know, consuming protein and the creatine. We're going to take a break, Andy, and looking at some of these interesting statistics which are in this article. So please stay with us and we'll get right back.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back to the DL Link Show on 101.9 Chai FM, where we connect you through insights, information, and illumination. Nikki Seberini here. Hope you are well. Of course, June is Cancer Survivors Month. We've been having interesting conversations around that. Andy Moore, dietitian, has joined us talking about getting back on the horse, the gymming horse, looking at taking those small little steps, not trying to achieve too much, stacking the habits, building it up slowly, mastering the mindset, and of course then focusing on some of women and going back to gym, the importance of strength training, resistance training. So thank you so much, Andy, for holding for us. I mean, I see that when we look at strength training, which you said is the same as resistance training, that women who regularly do strength training have 30% lower risk of cardiovascular related death than those who don't. So that's nearly three times the benefit recorded in men doing the same exercise. Do you know why? I mean, I know that osteoporosis, you know, if there's a risk around that, that the resistance and pushing weights is very good for the bones. But do you have any idea why strength training would be good for women's cardiovascular health?
Well, just with the heart protective effect of strength training, they've seen it with both aerobic, so that's cardio, and strength training. So I think the focus is more on, you know, getting women to start strength training again from not having done anything before. I think what you can say is both of those kinds of exercise offers a heart protective benefit in the same way. It's repetitive exercises to make you stronger. So they're just saying that, you know, you can get the effects from both types of exercise.
Okay.
Which is quite an amazing statistic.
It really is. I mean, a combination. You should be looking after, you should be doing aerobic exercise and you should be doing strength exercise. So you should be looking at a variation. So for someone who's listening right now, Andy, what, in order to really get the benefits, should you be looking at working out 20 minutes, half an hour per session? How many times a week? I know we said that start off slowly and break it down. But if you want the benefits, let's say now you're back into it, how often should people be working out, and how long should they be working out for?
Yeah, so it's also quite an interesting one to see that women actually need less exercise than men, and they see benefits, the same type of benefits from less hours in the gym or less minutes in the gym. So what we've seen from these studies is women can benefit from only about 140 minutes of moderate exercise per week, compared to men, which is 300 minutes. So, you know, we only have to do about half of the exercise in order to see the benefits that they're going to be doing in double that time. So that kind of works out to about 20 minutes a day, which is really doable when you look at it in the greater scheme of things, whether it's a longer session of, you know, 45 minutes, three or four times a week, or 20 minutes a day. It's more just finding that time to fit it into your daily day. But yeah, definitely. So getting that exercise in is not too challenging.
No, it's not. I mean, as you say, 20 minutes is so doable. If we go back to my example that I use from the Tiny Habits, where he says, start off with like a minute. If you think about that, and you know, that is your way of getting back into it, tiny, breaking it really, really down, within a short period of time, you can easily be doing 20 minutes a day. So doable. And obviously, the benefits are there. Again, difference between men and women. I mean, women and all their hormones and perimenopausal and menopausal. I mean, what kind of impact does that have on women's exercise and the results?
So, yeah, unfortunately, us as women, sometimes we get the short end of the stick when it comes to the hormone changes, going from men, your normal period, you know, monthly period, to perimenopause and menopause. That's when you see a sharp decline in your estrogen levels, which can result in lower recovery rates when you're gymming, lower strength, less energy, and also bone density loss. So that estrogen drop is extremely important to look at in the greater scheme of the picture, and the way that we exercise, because it increasing your bone density and your bone strength around this time is really, really important to maintaining those bones and the muscle that you've built. So especially as women get older, it's really, really important to look at muscle mass and how often we are exercising and how often we're doing strength training as well.
Gosh, I mean, really stressing the importance of it. It just sounds like, certainly as you get older, that gym really becomes very important if you want to support your skeleton, your muscles, your body, hormones, the heart. It seems to be boiling down to good exercise and, of course, good nutrition. Now, listen, we've only got a minute left and I'm about to throw such a big question. You as a nutritionist, very, very quickly, we know that with these GLP-1s, you know, the Ozempics and so many people, and we had, I was chatting with Professor Carol Ann Benn about the benefits of it. Very quickly, from your point of view, is that impacting you clients' nutrition, or even when people are on those GLP-1s are looking at having a well-balanced nutritional diet?
So I can't personally say, because I don't really do private clients, but I do product development at NPL. So that I do the development of the supplements and the proteins and things like that. But yeah, we have definitely seen the way it's changed things. Our protein, the interest in protein bars, shakes has gone up tremendously because of people eating less, you know, having less meals, because that the GLP-1 suppress your appetite. So, and also do cause muscle wasting. As long with the fat loss, you're losing muscle as well. So there has been a big uptick to the protein content of people's diets. But yeah, it just depends on the person. So, and where they're getting the GLP-1s from. If they're under the care of a good dietitian and doctor, they often will follow a good path with, you know, prioritizing their nutrition and eating well and all of that. But sometimes people do it behind back alley, and
yes,
then they're not, yeah, they won't be inclined to looking at it holistically, which is often quite it can be quite detrimental. So yeah, it's, I think it has definitely changed the industry quite a lot, for sure.
Fascinating. Really, we could carry on talking for ages, Andy, but we've run out of time. It's been so lovely having you on the show. Thank you for your few little tips that you shared with us and amazing insights, and hopefully inspiring people to get back, get to exercise, find something that you love. It's been lovely having you on the show. And I thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I have. From Miliki Zeberini, until next week, take care and goodbye.